KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of AFFECT, a community event about the work, culture, and design of social change. The conference will take place October 7th and 8th at the Ziba Auditorium in Portland. AFFECT will feature talks from Spawn on Me creator and podcaster Khalif Adams, Ferguson activist and social impact designer Dee Nichols, Nadia Gathers from Code 2040, and many more. Again, that's AFFECT, October 7th and 8th at the Ziba Auditorium, 810 Northwest Marshall Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fagring, and the show is Fight the Empire. And my guest today is F. William Engdahl, and he's an author and a risk consultant. And the main part of the program is going to be a very interesting article he wrote about Washington tries to break the BRICS, that's B-R-I-C-S, yeah, and the rape of Brazil begins. But he has a new book out that looks really interesting called The Lost Hegemon. And so we'll talk a little bit about that first. William Engdahl, good morning.
Good to be with you, Per.
Well, welcome to KBOO. Well, I was just reading this book, The Lost Hegemon. It's just, it looks really, I just saw the, you know, the article you sort of little preface you wrote on it about the U.S., the CIA making deals with the Muslim Brotherhood back in the 50s. That is really something I didn't know about. Tell us a little bit about that.
It actually started with the the CIA station chief in Munich, Germany, and in the early 50s, in the chaos of the after-war period and rebuilding of Europe and so forth, they discovered that there was a Nazi unit that actually recruited fanatical Islamists of the Muslim Brotherhood and found that they were such bloodthirsty anti-communists that they would be a useful propaganda tool and a useful instrument to try to irritate and make trouble for the Soviet Union, because there's so many Muslims in the Soviet Union at that time. And that was the beginning of what became a very, very obscene marriage between U.S. intelligence and the Muslim Brotherhood. And the interesting thing is I would call it devolution of it, because it's a downward spiral, that in the late 1970s, the CIA turned again to the Muslim Brotherhood in the form of an organization that got the name Mujahideen in Arabic. In Pakistan, they began training jihadists or terrorists to go after the Soviet Red Army in Afghanistan that was then in Afghanistan occupying the country. And Brzezinski later confessed that he deliberately convinced President Carter to do this CIA operation of training these Muslim jihadists, fanatics, to go after Russia in Afghanistan to provoke a Russian invasion, a Soviet invasion of the country, and then use that to demonize the Soviet Union and give what Brzezinski called the Soviet Vietnam, the defeat. It took 10 years, and what's interesting is the recruitment agent for the Mujahideen, and they were recruited from all over the Arab world, not just from Pakistan or Afghanistan. The chief recruiting agent was a young Saudi named Osama bin Laden. And he was sent there by the head of Saudi intelligence, who, by the way, remained head of Saudi intelligence until about 2.5 years ago. So that'll give you an indication of the depth of Saudi involvement in all of this. And it evolved. You can trace the genealogy, if you want to call it that, of the CIA's involvement with the Brotherhood. They took them out of Egypt in the 1950s after they were forced underground for a failed assassination attempt against Gamal Nasser, the president of Egypt at that time, and the CIA station chief. And when he was still living, I did a magazine interview with him. Miles Copeland bragged about how he got the leadership of the Muslim Brotherhood out of Egypt into Saudi Arabia. There you have what I call a marriage made in hell, where the ideology of political Islam, aggressive evangelical Islam, you believe as we do or we kill you kind of thing, was married with the most primitive camel herding culture of the Saudi desert called Wahhabism from the 1700s. These are the guys who smash statues and open the grave of the Prophet Muhammad because you're not supposed to have graves, and it's just, they're psychopaths. They're mad, but they weren't politically aggressive. Mm-hmm. So Saudi money, beginning that point, began financing missions of the Muslim Brotherhood all around the world, especially in Pakistan and Afghanistan.
Now we see where that's led to.
Well, it's a direct line. It went from Afghanistan in 1988-89 into the former Soviet Union, the Russian Federation, into Chechnya, where they CIA stirred up the Chechen wars against Moscow and tried to destabilize Russia in every direction, and also to destabilize the Russian pipeline, oil pipeline, from Baku in the Caspian Sea, off Azerbaijan, through Russia into the world oil markets. So the role of the CIA and political Islam is a very dirty, a very ugly role, and it goes right up into the training of ISIS. The ISIS, of course, morphed out of the organization of the Islam, Islamic State, the organization of Al-Qaeda in Syria and Iraq and Syria, and then they changed the name to the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, and then they decided that didn't ring so well, so they simply called it IS. But it's not the Islamic State. It's no state at all. It's a
well,
CIA.
Well, I think the U.S. has had this continual policies of kind of getting rid of secular leftist leaders in the Middle East and replacing them with these religious fanatics, and it's still going on. And now we have, you know, in Syria, where the U.S. still seems to have this idea that we can use the use al-Nusra, the al-Qaeda front, against Assad. And I really suspect that the U.S., some of these people that are being freed from Guantanamo, I wonder if any of them are being set up to kind of go into Russia and stir things up there.
Yeah, well, I think Guantanamo exists today for the very simple fact that it's offshore, out of the United States purview, and journalists can't poke around there. And it's a training camp for brainwashed zombies that are making these kind of ISIS attacks and head choppings and whatever other lovely things they do.
What?
And that's the zombie factory, if you will, for a lot of this. That's my conviction.
Let's get on to Brazil now. This article that you wrote in the New Eastern Outlook about the impeachment of Dilma Rousseff. A lot of stuff going on there.
Oh, indeed there is.
Why don't we kind of do a quick rundown of she's being accused of corruption by some of the most corrupt people in politics anywhere in the world.
Well, that's the thing. The man who replaced her, according to the constitutional succession, was the vice president, Michel Temer, and he is under investigation for taking money, campaign money. He has a different party from Rousseff. She formed a coalition with his party and her workers' party, that he took money from Petrobras, which was the original charge in the Brazilian press, or the rumor against Rousseff. So what you had was character assassination by the mainstream media in Brazil, which is owned by a group of billionaires, mainly the O Globo group of the Roberto Marinho family. And they ran a media slander campaign against her over a period of 3 years. The Joe Biden and Washington, the Obama administration, brought into place the National Endowment for Democracy, various other NGOs that they use for toppling governments they don't like, and they began hitting Rousseff from all directions, including the NSA wiretapping her personal mobile telephone, her cell phone. So she was charged formally with something called manipulation of the state budget prior to the 2014 elections to make the deficit look smaller. She denied the charges, and the Senate had its own expert accountants make an independent report, and the conclusion of that report, for which she was formally impeached, is there was no indication of direct or indirect action by Dilma Rousseff on any illegal budgetary maneuver. So at that point, the whole game, that was last August, the whole game against her should have fallen apart, but you had corrupt judiciary, a corrupt military, and a corrupt media indicting her by innuendo, the same way we like to do in America these days so much against Russia and Vladimir Putin, that every crime since the Adam eating the apple from Eve is owing to Vladimir Putin. It's the same kind of, you know, repeat a lie often enough and people believe it. It's the truth.
Well, I saw one article. Apparently, Michel Temer spoke to the Council of the Americas, and he said that that she was ousted because of her opposition to neoliberalism. He admitted it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's exactly. And the first thing, the rape of Brazil that I talk about in the article, is exactly that. The first thing he does as president or interim president until the elections in a year and a half is to begin a wholesale privatization of the state assets of Brazil, the oil assets. And Joe Biden went to Brazil. This is the interesting part. It seems that we have the real power brokers in Washington, if you want to call them that, these days are not the ones that are elected as president. Obama is not the power broker in Washington. George W. Bush was not a power broker anywhere. It was Dick Cheney, the vice president, and it's Joe Biden, the vice president now. So Joe Biden went down to Brazil and tried to convince Dilma Rousseff, the president then. She succeeded Lula, who was the Workers' Party president and quite popular, and Lula had passed a law or had introduced a law that was passed that made the offshore oil discoveries of Brazil. You remember about 6 or 7 years ago, around 2007, Petrobras, the state-owned oil company, discovered one of the largest offshore fields in the world in the last decades, estimated 100 billion barrels of oil. That alone would make Brazil into a world oil and gas power, and Chevron and Exxon, under the law that Lula passed, were cut out of the game in Brazil. And Washington and the CIA and the Pentagon and Chevron, the oil majors, were not at all happy. So they sent their water boy, Joe Biden, to try to turn Rousseff's mind after a little bit of time in office. She absolutely had no interest in that. I'm sure she was polite, but nothing happened. And then, shortly after Biden came home, it was revealed that the NSA was spying on President of Brazil's private telephone. So relations between Brazil and Washington became very chilly. So at that point, the decision was made in Washington to go for all-out destabilization of Rusev.
Well, I can kind of envision Biden's conversation with Dilma. I can almost hear him saying, "Hi, Dilma, that's a nice little oil company you got there. I'd hate to see anything happen to it."
Yeah, something like that, you can imagine, yeah.
So,
to make, from the standpoint of Joe Biden's friends, to add insult to injury, not only did they not let Exxon and Chevron dominate the development of Brazilian oil, but they invited the Chinese in. Oh, God forbid. Sinopec was invited in and became partner with Repsol, Sinopec Brazil, and several other companies, Norway, Statoil, to develop the Brazilian oil fields. No British oil majors, no U.S. oil majors. So this was really an affront to the hegemon, if you want to call them that, the mm-hmm. patriarchs. They did not like being treated like this.
Well, there's some other little interesting things that there was one of Temer's allies, a Romero Juca, he was taped and he was plotting this impeachment in order to stop a corruption investigation of Petrobras.
Yes, that also.
Uh-huh. And then another ally, Senator Aloysio Nunes, he went to D.C. and his trip was organized by none other than Madeleine Albright's lobbying firm.
Well, the other thing is Madeleine Albright is the president of one of the color revolution NGOs of the U.S. government called the National Endowment for Democracy's International Democratic Institute. She's the head of that, and they do go around the world and work with left-wing or whatever you want to call them, populist governments, and destabilize wherever they can, wherever somebody's opposing Washington's globalization agenda.
So now we've got this group of corrupt neoliberals in power in Brazil, and they are working to privatize the oil company. You know, that apparently this pre-salt deposit offshore in Brazil is high-quality oil. It's rather expensive because it's so mm-hmm. deep under the ocean. But and they hope to finish this by the year 2018, in which case they might be possibly voted out of power. So this is kind of, they got to do this fast.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So this is, it's like what George Soros and Jeffrey Sachs and the Harvard boys did in Russia under Yeltsin and Chubais in the early 1990s. They got Chubais to take every crown jewel in the state hands of the Russian Federation from the Soviet era and almost got away with privatizing everything of value. Fortunately, they didn't succeed, but the oil companies, Gazprom, remain state assets to the present day, and the military industry was not privatized for the most part.
Well,
Yes, so, but that's the same mm-hmm. modus operandi that they used in the Yeltsin-era shock therapy.
Well, I really think that's why our Washington leaders hate Putin so much, because he stopped Yeltsin from giving away the store, you know?
Yeah. No, that's
I think he's smarter than they are, too.
I don't personally have any impression that the neocons or the people making policy in Washington, Victoria Nuland, John Kerry, even though he supposedly went to an elite university, Yale, are at all intelligent. I think they're rather stupid because they destroy rather than try to build up. Mm-hmm. They have an agenda that, of necessity, must destroy wherever there's anything positive.
Well, you know, it's an interesting book that came out called The China Mirage by James Bradley. And part of that, he talks about, you know, the China lobby and the fall of Chiang Kai-shek. And he has a whole lot about the, you know, these elite foreign policy guys from the Ivy League colleges who, you know, they thought they were so all-knowing, and they just completely screwed up. They started screwing up back then, and they've been doing it ever since, but they still seem to be in charge.
And that's because we let them be in charge. I feel quite strongly about this. America would not be the mess it's in if we hadn't lost sight of our sense of being good as a people, as a nation. Think back the last, I can think back into the early 50s in my life, but somewhere along the way with the Vietnam War, that was a huge turning point, the assassination of both Kennedys and also Martin Luther King, the involvement in other wars, the presidents that we've had from Ronald Reagan on to the present, and we just get more and more mired into self-punishment as a people. Look at what we've allowed to happen to the economy. Why have we not forced these congressmen out who refuse to nationalize the six Wall Street banks and put their boards of directors and their officers on trial for crimes against the nation? I'm talking about Citigroup, I'm talking about J.P. Morgan Chase, I'm talking about Goldman Sachs, the so-called gods of money, the gods of Wall Street, as I titled one of my books. And instead, we let them rob the nation. They're more powerful, they're bigger balance sheets than they were before the 2007-2008 financial crisis. We allowed that to happen. We let our mainstream media twist our mind from reality when we know in our guts or in our hearts or whatever that it's a lie. So it's not, the answer isn't to be angry, the answer is to change the thing, to move.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned, you know, in your article on Brazil, and you talk about what's going on in, you know, how similar it was to the looting of Russia.
Yeah.
And now we have, you know, you talk about Joe Biden, you know, making his offer to Dilma Rousseff. Well, Joe Biden's, one of his sons, Hunter, is, he's involved in some gas company in Ukraine. You know anything about that?
Yes. Well, Joe Biden was the point man. If you go back onto YouTube and listen to that disgusting tape of Victoria Nuland that was hacked into and put on the internet at the time, probably by the old Ukrainian Secret Service, where she is literally dictating who's going to be the prime minister without any election, and her ambassador, Payet, at that point in Kiev, says, well, the European Union wants so-and-so. And then she answers with this disgusting comment about...
we can't say what the word was, but we know
what it was. Well, it was the F word against the European Union. And any respectable country at that point would have fired that Assistant Secretary of State for completely inexcusable behavior. But in fact, she's still sitting there hurling epithets. But the other point about that tape is that she mentions that Biden is coming to Kiev to seal the deal.
Mm-hmm.
This was a coup d'etat by Washington, one of the most open in history, as was said by Stratfor at the time, George Friedman. And yet, you know, the world ignores it. They put sanctions on Russia. The European Union is killing itself economically by cutting itself out of not only the Russian market, but increasingly the entire Eurasian market, the biggest market in the world. And for what reason? You know, why is Angela Merkel doing all this against German national business interests?
Well, now this company, I just read that the that Hunter Biden's is a director of this gas company, and they're ready to drill for shale gas in East Ukraine, where this rebellion is going on.
I don't think they're going to get much drilling in East Ukraine for shale gas.
Well, they're hoping to.
I don't think they'll get near it, frankly.
Uh-huh.
Ukraine is a failed state right now. The the operation of Nuland and her neocon buddies and the CIA, Brennan's people there, and Blackwater or Tsai or Tsi or whatever they call themselves nowadays to hide. It's a complete catastrophe. The European Union doesn't want any part of it. They're trying to back out of the whole Poroshenko game. And it's just everything these neoconservatives touch turns to dirt.
Mm-hmm. Well, now there's talk about Victoria Nuland being our next Secretary of State if Hillary Clinton becomes president.
Mm-hmm. That's... Well, frankly, I think the health issues of Hillary Clinton are such that I can't see how she could become president physically. These are very serious issues in the medical reports I've seen and mm-hmm. the tapes that I've seen of her with her uncontrollable spasms, her fainting spells, her collapses.
Well, I've heard about this, but then what does that say about the vice president? Is Tim Kaine any kind of... Is he the same kind of person that Dick Cheney and Joe Biden were? I mean, is he prepared to step into that role?
Most likely he is. He's a very opaque fellow. You know, not too much is known about Tim Kaine, but I certainly don't think the Clinton-Bush machine would have chosen just anybody to be the heartbeat away from the president.
Well, that is very interesting. I didn't watch the debate recently, but apparently he didn't do so well. He was kind of, the consensus seemed to be that he was too eager to, too much of the attack dog, and it didn't work. But we're near the end of our show. Tell us more about, where can people get a copy of The Lost Hegemon?
Okay, my book is available on Amazon. I have my own publishing house through CreateSpace Amazon. It's mm-hmm. more financially supportive of my work than going through other publishers. And they can go to my website, www.WilliamEngdahl.com, and you'll find the book and click on the cover, and it takes you directly to Amazon, where you can purchase it. So it's a must-read book if you want to understand the entirety of U.S. involvement, not only in Syria, but in Turkey, in the whole coup d'etat against Erdogan through Fethullah Gulen, who's sitting in Pennsylvania as a CIA asset to try to take over Turkey. And it's a fascinating story, as you indicated earlier.
Well, you see, I don't know. Do you have any quick...
Oh, let me say one other thing, if mm-hmm. I could, Per, before we close off. And that is, if people want to go onto my website, you will be invited for a free, twice monthly, every 2 weeks, I do a geopolitical brief or analysis or sections of one or another of my books, and if you simply sign up for that, it takes about 20 seconds or 15 seconds, depending on how fast you type,
mm-hmm.
Then you'll be eligible for that free newsletter.
Well, I hear the music playing, so it's time to wrap up this show. We've been talking with F. William Engdahl, author of an interesting article on the rape of Brazil, and also the author of, looks like, a really interesting book, The Lost Hegemon, which we're going to be keeping track of that in the future. So thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Per.
Stay tuned. This is KBOO, your radio station. Stay tuned for Air Cascadia.
Thank you very much, Per. Yes, Air Cascadia coming right up here on the Boo, KBOO Portland. Coming up in 15 minutes, join us for Flashpoints. Today, they look at the effects of Hurricane Matthew on Haiti and at some successes for day laborers in California. At 11 o'clock, host Ken Jones talks with Gigi Little, editor of the new collection of shorts, short fiction, that is. It's called City of Weird, 30 Otherworldly Portland Tales. And at 11:30, it's Black Book Talk with Patricia Welsh, O.B. Hill, and Emma Jackson Ford. That is all coming up this morning here on KBOO, right after Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, with your headlines, interviews, and commentary coming right up. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support for KBOO Community Radio in our recent fall membership drive.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Full Gallop, produced by Triangle Productions. The play runs through Saturday, October 8th at the Sanctuary at Sandia Plaza in Portland. Full Gallop is a portrait of Diana Vreeland, who stood at the center of American style for 5 decades. As editor of Harper's Bazaar and Vogue magazines and as a member of the International Cafe Society, she chronicled the extraordinary people and events of her time. This play is a portrait of Vreeland at a turning point in her life. Again, that's Full Gallop, now through October 8th at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.